All right, welcome to this week's Focus Corner postseason, end of season edition. Unfortunately, I know we did the post game show after the Ohio game. Phony, how you feeling?
Much better. I mean, you look back, it was a challenging season, and it, of course, didn't end how we wanted. But again, it wasn't that surprising, and they were kind of behind the eight ball, so. I feel for the players. They deserve a better ending. You know, all these guys in the tournament deserve a better ending than what they're probably going to get. But,
All right, so this week we've got Grant Kersey joining. Shout out White Mama. Fresh. We've got Hav is at a – is he at a baseball game, softball? I don't know.
I think he's on soccer. Maybe he's playing kind of soccer. Game.
Mark may be joining a little later. A very special guest in honor of Sweet 16 and coming here to talk about the transfer portal. We have Tevin Jones. Appreciate you, my guy, hey. Joining.
Appreciate y'all.
Let's start off Sweet 16. You know, big weekend coming up. UVA's not in it, of course. Should we go with Prep Phony? How do you want? I know you've got questions for Tevin.
What I immediately think about is a hashtag Tevin was fouled. I try to use it personally a couple times a year, and it's got a pretty good history because, you know, and it's funny every time with the Auburn game and every time an Auburn fan is like tied double dribbled, you know, my reaction is going to be like, let it go. And then my second thought is, but Tevin was fouled. So give us the answer. First of all, were you fouled there, Tevin?
Yes, I was fouled. A lot of people know me for selling fouls, but that one, I did not have to sell at all, man. I was fouled. Coach Bennett basically told me, like, guard, face guard. He was like, face guard, front him, don't let him touch the ball. Evan's gonna guard the ball and double team, and I was doing a good job, and he just took his forearm and put it right in my throat and pushed off. I tried to sell it even more, but it is what it is.
Gone down, man. Just take go.
Yeah.
What was the scenario? We were down by two.
We were down by two.
38 seconds.
All right, so we're face guarding and we're trying to get it back, and you did your job, and yeah, Applegate. Who was it? Apple was his name.
I can't remember.
The rest. They had two good guards because yeah. I was at the game.
It was Applebee. It was
Applebee's, Chili's. Applebee's, Chili's.
Keith Appling. He's Appling. Yeah, yeah. He's good. He's not in a good situation right now. But it was him. Who else did they have?
Payne. Adrian Payne.
They had Payne. Yeah. Bro, they were huge. I'm not.
They
even
were huge. They were long.
They were big, huge. Yeah. Yeah, they were huge, man.
That was one of the best games I'd ever seen in person. Just head-to-head, just like unbelievable. And that includes our run through the championship, right? That game was just like wire-to-wire, high-level basketball. Like that was a Final Four game in the Sweet 16. It was like unfair.
I mean, as a fan, like I have to put our championship season as my favorite season because they won the championship. But if it weren't for that championship, that 13-14 season, I mean, that was everything, you know, you want as a fan. You see their struggles and it's like, this team, and then the way you guys turned it around in January, where was your head at when that turnaround was happening?
All right. So first off, when we lost to Tennessee by 30, I'm just like,
38.
We lost by 30. Oh, 38, 40. Hey, just rub it. Okay,
75.
Whatever. You know, they were hitting every shot, man. Like, I remember poking one of the guys in the eye. And, like, it wasn't on purpose, but he made it. Like, that's the type of game it was. And, you know, they won by 30, and we went back, and, like, Coach Bennett didn't like the fact that we weren't taking it as serious as we should because we – like, it was nothing we could do. We almost lost by 40 points.
Yeah.
And so we got up that next morning at 5 a.m. He made us, like, he was like, since y'all think it's a joke, we'll be up at 5 a.m. We didn't get in until 2:30 in the morning. So we were back in the gym, and what he made us do, he made us clean the floors of the practice gym. Yeah, he made us clean the floors. Then they lectured us for, like, an hour. hour or two, then we went back to our apartments. But during that turnaround was crazy because we had a team meeting. It was just the players, like a player team meeting. And obviously Malcolm and Joe, Akil, they all stepped up and was just at the head and was just telling us, like, they don't want to go out like this. Well, obviously Akil didn't want to go out like that. And that if we weren't going to take it serious, like, just give up our scholarships type deal. And, you know, every practice from then on was super intense. Everybody was super locked in. I may not have played, like, a lot of minutes my sophomore year, but the things in practice that I had to do, like, everybody was locked in. Whatever we had to do on scout team or, you know, the guys that weren't playing. When it started to turn around, it was a brotherhood. It was just because we became closer. Like, that 40-point loss made us become closer. Like, that was the closest team I've ever been a part of. Wow. Like, we all went to bat for each other. And during that turnaround, I was just like, wow. Like, we played Duke at home. I think we had run, like, three or four straight. Then we played Duke at their house. And the way we lost to Duke was crazy. Came back down 13. Rasheed Suleiman hit, a fadeaway corner two.
Yeah.
It bounced all the way up. It was like some movie-type deal, man. It bounced all – we're just looking – and it just bounced all the way up. Like, it was almost up at the roof type deal. And it just dropped straight in. And that's how they won that game. And then after that, like, I don't remember losing a game after that, man. Like, it was wild. It was fun, though. Super fun ride.
What do you attribute the – you said the team came together. Everybody's the same page. We're not going to go out like this. What do you attribute that to? Like, in terms of the locker room, was it Akil, Joe Harris? Was it you? Was it everybody
It was all of us, really.
Same page.
Yeah, same page. It was same page. And, like, even the guys that weren't playing a lot, man, like, we weren't complaining at all. Like, yeah, we wanted to play more, but that's what made the team better, that we didn't complain. We did our job. Like, if coach wanted me to be the superstar on the scout team, that's what I was. Like, and we all just gelled. There was no, oh, I'm better than you because I play 40 minutes and you play 5 minutes. Yep. Like, there was never none of that on that team, man. And that's what made the difference. That's what made that huge difference and that huge turnaround happen.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was an amazing run.
Yeah.
Well, walk us through the prep for the Sweet 16, since we're about what are the rest of the 16 teams going through right now? Obviously, it's obviously a different situation with COVID. But what was that like for your squad when you look back on it? Like, the preparation, was it just like, hey, any other game? Or was it like the final four right here, we got this?
It was really, for us, it was championship or bust. Like, that was our whole deal. When we had that meeting, we said ACC regular season, ACC tournament, national championship. Like, that was our goal. We checked two of them off. You know, and as we're going into the NCAA tournament, our first round was Coastal Carolina, I believe. We played Coastal Carolina, and they came out hot. You know, they came out hot, and we came back, and, you know, we won the game by a reasonable fashion. Then we won the next, and we got to the Sweet 16. It was just, like, it was a totally different type of locked in. We all could tell that we were right there. Like, we get past Michigan State, we felt like we were going to win it all. But Michigan State was the Great Wall of China for us. Like, it was like, yo, we can conquer this. We're going to win the national championship. So we were locked in, man. We sacrificed a lot of time. Like, I wouldn't even though I wasn't playing a lot, I wasn't talking to my people a lot. Like, that's how locked in we were. Obviously, we had our bad times and whatnot, but we watched a lot of film on Michigan State. They were similar. They were super similar to us. Slowed the game down, ran our offense, got the best shot, not just, you know, a good shot, got the great shot. But that preparation was crazy. It was crazy. And it was a great experience because, well, we were in the Barclays Center, I believe. Oh, we're in Madison Square Garden. MSG. We were in MSG.
And yeah. You guys stayed MSG in the hotel downtown, because we all came down there.
one of the nicest hotels I've ever been in.
Yeah, in my life. It was a revamped scenario. It used to be an old hotel, and they revamped it and made it nice.
Yeah, they revamped it. So
I'm sure you guys didn't go out the night before the way our teams used to. So
no, man. We look so when we went on road trip, this is our deal. They put blue tape on our door. So if we ever went outside our door, they knew. Yeah, that's how they did us. Like, wow. But the team that we had, I don't know if they did y'all like that, Grant, or when you travel. But yeah, see, the team that we had, we were locked in, but we were like, I mean, we were rock stars at the time, man. Like, we were on a crazy win streak. We just won the ACC tournament. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So anywhere we went, like, people trying to buy us drinks. So people were trying to pay for our food or, you know, it was a lot of distractions. So
it was me, probably.
They put blue tape on our doors, man. So when it hit about 8:39, everybody had to be in the – well, 10, I'll say 10. Everybody had to be in the room, blue tape. Lights off. It was that type of deal. So yeah, we were super locked in, man.
We never had any blue tape.
Man, they put blue tape.
You know, if they figured out something even more secretive now. That's all that is.
Yeah, that was crazy. But we were the type of team that like we would sneak out if we could. Like if we could, we would sneak out and go enjoy ourselves and then come back and then play the next day. Me and another guy did it once. I'm not going to throw him under the bus.
Throw him under the bus.
I'm not doing it. We done it once, and you know what I'm saying? The next day, we actually played a good grip of minutes. Like, we played good, but, like, that after effect was crazy. So I never did that again, man, ever.
No, sometimes you play better the next day that way.
I'm not going to lie.
I've had my best practices the next practice, not games, practice. After going out in Marquette and Milwaukee, whatever, the next day I was on fire. So,
right. You know. It's like that. It's weird. I don't know why it's like that.
Because you're young. You're 20. You're not.
Yeah. Like me. That's very true. That's very true.
So the other hot topic right now, the transfer portal. And we talked about this as a group. Like, we'd love to talk to you about your decision. Obviously, the times are different now.
Right.
But maybe walk us through end of the season. You come back to Charlottesville and you've got to, everybody knew you had a choice to make. You had to sit down. Like, what was that process like? I know you've talked about it on other places, but walk us through like sitting down with TV and having a frank conversation about it. And then what goes down at that point?
So, I think every coach on the staff knew like that. You know, they knew I was talented. Like, I was a two-star guy coming in. I didn't get to go to camps, you know, and showcase my talent. My freshman year, I surprised everybody. Then my sophomore year, I didn't play a lot. And they knew, like, okay, this is not his type of game. He's going to want to leave. Boom, boom. So we had our exit meetings. I was the last exit meeting. So that's how I knew, like, okay, they
kind of
know.
Does that take place over a couple of days, or is that like a one day, all those get done?
So over a couple of days, he'll meet with, like, it was over that one day, actually. Yeah, it was over that one day. We had the exit meetings, took one day. I was the last one. They just text you and be like, yo, coach wants to meet with you at this time, boom. And that's how it would go. So I went in, you know, we sat down, and obviously Coach Bennett knew where my heart was. He was just like, I mean, I know where your heart is, but like, where's your competitive side? Like, I'm just like, Coach, I just want to play. Like, I sacrificed how I really play for you and for the team. Like, cause I'm a bucket getter. Like, I was a bucket getter, but I also love to get my teammates involved, and that's just something I couldn't do with the system that we ran. And I was just like, yeah, I just want to play, man. Whether it's not, just give me 10 minutes, boom, boom. So, you know, that conversation went on, and he was just like, yeah, man, Malcolm and London are our league guards, and, you know, I don't see them losing their starting position, which I had no problem with at all. I just wanted that chance because, I mean, every time I got out on the floor, I felt like a positive came from it, except for a couple times, you know. But we talked about it some more, and the role that I wanted, he just felt like, this is what he told me. He was like, the role that I wanted, that if I wanted to play it, that he thinks I should transfer. And but he would love to keep me here, because at the time, everybody looked at me as the glue guy. Like,
right.
I was the heart of the team because of what I brought, the energy I brought. Yeah, I played pretty good minutes, man. And I was like, even when I didn't play, like, I was on the bench cheering them on. Like, that was entertainment for me. Like, I had to have fun somehow. It was the type of person I am.
Right.
So I danced on the sideline. And next thing I know, everybody's on – every bench is on ESPN dancing on the sideline. You know, so I'm just like, all right, this is cool. Like, I started something. And – but when I went to transfer, so he was just like, I'll give you, like – what did he tell me? I'll give you, like, 48 hours, you know, just get back to me. Think on it a few days. And my prep school coach called me. He's like, oh, you ain't going nowhere. But they blah, this, that, and the third. You're staying there. I'm just like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not staying. And my mom called me, and she was like, before you meet with him, call me. We need to talk. My meeting the next, after 2 days passed, I called her. She didn't answer. We went into the meeting, and I was just like, if I'm not, like, going to be given a fair chance, I just feel like I should, you know, release myself of duties here. Like, I want to go look at other places. And it hurt, man, because I love this school. I love the people. Right. I love the team. Yeah, I love the staff. The man, I loved it. But I wanted to play. Like, I knew what I went into college for. I wanted to play. My dream was obviously pro basketball. And I just felt like the situation that I was in wasn't going to put me in the best position to play pro. But, yeah, man, I got my release papers. It was a sad day. I'm not going to lie. I cried that day.
Yeah, like,
and my girlfriend at the time was Jaren Gardner. She was on the women's team at the time. And I had told her, like, I'm not going to transfer the week before. I was like, I was just talking all year. Like, I'm not transferring. Like, I can't leave this team. And then when that happened, I ended up transferring. You know, I had to break the news to her. So I went through that process along with the transferring process. Yeah,
people forget all of this, like, personal stuff that players have to do, because they're also regular people, and I think,
man,
we tend to compartmentalize our desires there. So if they couldn't talk you out of it, at what point had you decided to transfer? Was it during the season? Was there a point that, you know, okay, I'm not going to be here next year?
A point I feel like I knew. We played VCU. We played VCU, and obviously, you know, that game was for a guy like myself with a lot of energy that's gritty. I got in. You know, we were losing at that time. I got in. I got an offensive foul call on one of their guys. I got an assist to someone. Then I played defense good again. Then right before half, I was like, with me, it was like short rope handcuff. So I had to play like a robot. Right. And I'm dribbling the ball. Briante Weber's guarding me. And he's in my ear. He's in my ear. He's like, yo, I know you can't make no moves. If you do, he's going to take you out. And I'm just thinking like, yo, he's right. Like, I'm like, he's right. Like, I can't do anything. So I go to cross over in front of him. He picks the ball. They score. You know, we go into halftime. And I don't see the floor anymore after that. And that night, that's when I went to my apartment. I closed my door. I cried. I prayed. That's when I knew, like, the end of the season, I'm probably gone. Like, right. I've been through too much. The summer, too. The summer kind of gave me – I was getting hints from some coaches on the staff, like, yo, you might want to transfer, because it was just, like, already set in stone. Even though I performed well during the summer,
right.
Just my style didn't fit. My style didn't fit. Like, I was gritty. I talked trash. I did all that. And
yeah,
my style didn't fit.
Yeah, fit the mold. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a great summer. The first official practice was, like, October, and he called the starting lineup out. And everybody thought, like, I was a starting guard. And he put London at the starting guard, and it kind of crushed me. Like, and I loved London to death, man. I loved all of them. Like, I had no ill intention towards London or anybody when that happened. I was just like, I was crushed. Like, and I was done. I was done then, but then I gave it another chance. He split me in London's minutes like two games and we won by 30. And that's when I thought, like, okay, he's going to do this. No, that didn't happen. And then the VCU game happened, and that's when I knew, like, yeah, okay, it's wraps for this. So that's when I really knew.
Right. Yeah, you can't operate on a short leash.
Yeah, man.
Then you play scared. And but, you know, I think there have been a few guys over the years that you know, he's done that with, and then you see some guys that have a lot more, we'll say, latitude when they're out there.
Right. Yeah. So, like the team Kyle guy, and you know, Ty Jerome, that was the most freedom I've ever seen the guards have, man. That was crazy.
Yep.
And they won the national championship, you know, and I was excited because I'm like, yo, it's gonna change. Like the guards are gonna start getting freedom. You know what I'm saying? That was great. I love watching them play. I love watching.
Why
play.
Why do you think they? Why do you think they? Why do you think they had the freedom? I have my opinion.
I think because the bigs weren't as elite as they were with us. That's what I think. And they were really, those guys were really, they can shoot the freaking skin off the ball.
So maybe they earned it in a way?
Yeah,
in a different way?
And they could shoot the skin off the ball. I would have let them just play too, you know?
Right.
If we go back to your situation, so you make that call. Which, by the way, we talked about it at the time. You had to, to me, I was like, I was a fan of Tevin Jones. I want to see you play too. Like, you weren't going to play, you should go play. Right? I mean, it made total sense to me. But then after that happens, you make the call. I mean, you've gone on record as saying, oh, I shouldn't have done it now. But at the time, you get some offers, you take, and they kind of like avalanched at that point. But maybe walk everybody through what happened after that. Like, so it's almost like a worst case scenario.
So when I transferred, when it was released, it was like, I don't know, it was like I had a bad name or something, man. And then the thing is, I've never told anybody this, like only Justin knew this. Clemson wanted me to transfer there, but they found a loophole because I played football in high school. I was all state. They were like, yo, could bring you on the football team. You could just be a walk-on on the basketball team. And you could play right away. I'm just like, all right, like I might could do that. Like, and you don't have to sit the 2 years. Cause then if you transfer to a team within the conference, you had to sit 2 years. It was
extra punishing, yeah.
Yeah, like, so they found a loophole. And when I got my paperback of schools that were blocked, Clemson was the first school on there. So that killed my move with them. Yeah, so the first week, like I heard nothing. Like I'm calling my mom, I'm worried. I'm like, mom, like, what am I gonna do? Like, I know they're not gonna take me back here now. So like, what am I gonna do? I'm just gonna come home and just work on my game and, you know, try to get back in next year. And then Coach Susie at the time and Coach Williford reached out to Radford. Coach Williford reached out to Winston-Salem State and Appalachian State. Appalachian State called me up and they flew in to Charlottesville. Took me to brunch. They took me to Cavs Inn. We ate there. Like the coach then was Fox. I can't remember his first name. He was Steph's assistant coach at Davidson. And he came in bringing me film. And he's like, look, I know you can shoot the ball. I know you can handle it. We've watched you play before. Because App State was recruiting me in high school and they lost touch. And they were like, yeah, we watched you play before. I want you to come here and do this for us. Like, basically, the ball's going to be in my hands. Like, and so any guy is going to be like, okay, this is D1 still, and they want the ball in my hands. Yeah. I'm going. Like, and Radford had one of my good friends there, Rashawn Davis at the time, and they wanted me and him to be in the backcourt. Then once to Salem State, my mom just wasn't going for it because she said it was a bad area and whatnot. So I ended up committing to App State prematurely. Then I put it on Twitter. I put App State in with the eyes, and then everybody like blew that tweet up. And then a week before school, App State calls me, and my grade point average at UVA was like a 3.2 at the time. They called me, and it was like, your grades are good, boom, boom. But unfortunately, we just got sanctioned. We can't take transfers now. And this was a week before school. So now I'm dead in the water. You know, my transfer process was crazy. I'm dead in the water. I don't know what to do. It's a week before school. all the school and UNC Greensboro was recruiting me. All the schools that were wanting me, I turned down. I'm hitting them up like, boom, boom. Y'all got space, No, we've already picked the guard. You told us you were going to App State. Boom, boom. So now I have no school to go to. It's a week before school starts. No school to go to. My mom even called Coach Bennett, and Coach Bennett was like, I mean, I wish we could take him back, but we gave a scholarship to Darius Thompson at the time. And then, like, I think some D2s got heat of me transferring to Tarleton State. It was the top D2 in the country. And what was the other one? It was in Missouri, Central Missouri. They just won the D2 championship the year before. They brought me in for a visit. I ended up going to Tarleton State, D2. And my whole thought process was just to go here, kill, and then go back D1 the next year. Because I was going to go to Longwood or UNC Charlotte the next year and finish out D1. And then 6 games in at the D2, I was averaging like 14-6. I tore my labrum, and I was out for the season. So that just like completely – that's when I hit my depression stage, man. I hit everything. And then I ended up – the coach ended up getting mad at me because I left there because my uncle got sick. And I ended up going to NAIA. He blocked me from going D1 and D2. I don't know how coaches could do that back then, but I ended up going to NAIA. It was like playing high school ball again, man. I was averaging 40 in our scrimmages. And then 3 days before our first official game, last possession of a scrimmage, I broke my foot. Like, it was crazy. Like, when I left UVA, everything just went downhill, man. I just thought my career was over.
I want to go back to the fact you had a 3.2 GPA.
Yeah, man.
I never sniffed that. So, I mean, you threw that in, like, whatever. That's what we do.
My mom didn't play about my grades. Like, she didn't – I failed a class. I'm not going to lie. I failed a class in Virginia. It was astrology. I hated that class.
Astrology? We all took that.
Yeah,
like, I hated that class. 1,000 people in the class. Yeah,
I hated that class. I failed that class. That was the only class I failed. But
wait, was it astrology or astronomy? What?
It was astrology.
Astrology. Yeah, we all had it.
Like, yes, it was super boring. Man, look, hold up, I'm lying. I said astrology, astronomy. So Devin Hall in London, and yeah, stars and stuff.
Okay.
My bad. Devin Hall and London were in the class with me. Me and London never paid attention in that class. Like, never. Like, we both failed. We never paid attention in that class. Devin was a scholar, man. He was on it. He passed that class with flying colors. But us, no, we never paid attention in that class. But, yeah, man, I left UVA with a 3.2, 3.1, somewhere around there. My mom didn't play about my grades. I always had – that was my lowest GPA ever, though. Like, I've always had like a 3.7 and up until I got to UVA. UVA was hard to me. UVA was hard, man, at the time. So that was my grade point average, man.
Man, that's wild. But what if? Well, let's play a what if. What if that season, your last season, there was COVID? And you guys couldn't hang out. How different would it be, do you think? I mean, it's hard to say, but what would be your guess? Would you guys have gotten as close if you weren't allowed to?
I think we still would have got close like that. Because I think we still would have went to each other's houses and gathered up regardless. We still would have been close. I think that would have brought us even closer, to be honest. Because the restrictions, like, we couldn't see anybody. Our team was really the only people where we could see. So, yeah, I think we would have. We would have got super close. We were already super close. Like, we planned, like, we went to movies together. We did the dinner thing together. We did that at least 3 to 4 times a week. That built a lot of chemistry right there. A lot of it.
Did you watch games this year? Did you see?
Yeah, I watched a few. Yeah, I watched a few games this year.
You know, because a lot of folks have said the team, or not a lot of folks, but I've seen different accusations that the team didn't seem as maybe as tight. as some past teams have been, and I wonder how much COVID might be affecting that, or if it's just a different group of guys and how everyone gets along.
Me, I wouldn't, like, inside, I wouldn't know, but I want to say COVID, but it was just a lot of, on that team, I felt like it was a lot of different personalities, like, and, you know, you had your transfers coming in, playing a year, then you had your guys that, you know, that didn't play a lot last year, got played good minutes, and you had your young guys. And so, and obviously this generation is different. It's way different. Like, we believed in close-knit family type of things. A lot of those guys might believe in something different, like, you know, caring about what they got going on and not their teammates. I'm pretty sure they had their groups, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure any team was closer than our team.
Yeah.
I would say, I think you make a good point, Tevin, like, the ability to go out, like, and just go to a restaurant with a couple guys, like, that goes a long way off the court. So then it goes a long way on the court. So like not having that during COVID, I mean, it definitely plays into it. Because like going out together to a restaurant, seeing people you know, like saying hello to people in the community, all that is different than just ordering in and eating at the apartment.
It's very different. It's very different. I know we used to go out and not even pay for our meal sometimes. Like, somebody would pay for our meal and walk out. We wouldn't even know. And just meeting new people seeing us together, people taking pictures of us together. Like, we experienced a lot together, a lot. And COVID probably screwed that up for that team when it came to that chemistry part.
Yeah, because the year we won it all, a few of us were going out to eat every night. Just yeah, see? It was just pick what restaurant and go out. And then next day, just do the same thing.
Well, that makes it an added advantage for these teams that are really senior led, that have a lot of seniors, because these guys have been together already for years and have that familiarity that they're not trying to build this year.
Yeah, that's very true. That's why Loyola Chicago is having so much success right now.
Yeah, they're fun to watch.
And then, yeah, let's talk about it right now. The Sweet 16. Have you been watching the games? Who do you have? Who do you think's gonna
win? I've been watching. I mean, I got Gonzaga, but I think the only team, the two teams that I picked that can beat them if they make it, I think Baylor can beat them, and Loyola Chicago can beat them. But I don't, you know, you never know. It's March, so who knows? But I got Gonzaga.
Yeah, pretty safe. Pretty safe.
Yeah, pretty safe.
Gonzaga works for the field, right?
Yeah, it definitely works for the field.
And then if we're going to Virginia's team, today they just announced Casey is transferring. There's a bunch of rumors that other people are going through. What advice would you give these guys that are sitting down and literally in your same situation where they didn't get a ton of minutes, they're questioning where they fit in? What would your advice be to them?
We assume those exit meetings were held today. So let's say those players are in there 48 hours because Tony said last night he hadn't held them yet. And now we're starting to see activity, which tells me that happened today.
Right. So my advice to them would just be to sit down and talk with their people, their inner circle first. Like, don't just go and make, you know, rash decisions because, oh, I didn't play a lot or I don't like the system. Because at the end of the day, the playing for Virginia, bro, like, if I would have stayed there all 4 years, I know my last 2 years I would have flourished. Like, now looking back at it, like, dang, maybe I should have sat down and waited my turn. Being there is all about being patient. In this process, if you're gonna leave, you have to make sure that if you're looking to leave, that the coaches want you, that somebody wants you. You have to be wanted, and now this is your second go around with the recruiting process. Now you know the deal, so you just have to pinpoint everything. I would say write everything down that you feel like the team that you want to be with, what you bring to the team, and then when you go and have those meetings with those coaches, ask them those questions, like, why do you want me? What can I do for this team? Will I play a lot of minutes? Like, I'm not, like, if I have to come in and perform, obviously. But how are you looking at me right now, like, on the squad for next year? And they get to play right away. So that's completely different now, because a lot of coaches didn't want to take me because I was going into my junior year. And if I had to sit a year, it was going to be, you know, I was just going to play my senior year. So that's how that went with me. But that's what I would tell them, just to be patient, sit and write things down, make sure they're making the right decision. Think about the future. Regardless, if you play a lot or not, UVA is a great school to graduate from. I'm actually getting back enrolled into school to finish out my degree at UVA.
Right. That's a valuable degree, man.
Yeah, man, it's a valuable degree. And it's free, like, you're on scholarship. Education's free. So, like, being wise like this now, I wish I would have had this back then, but that's what I would tell them, just to be patient and to make sure everything is in your favor when you're transferring.
Yeah, it's hard because I get it. Because I remember at that time, it was like, you want to play. You
got all that energy. We used to talk a lot. Yeah. We used to talk a lot about that.
Yeah, you got all the energy. You want to play. Like, how do you fight? In this day and age, you're asking somebody to be patient. It seems like a really tough task. Like, I don't know.
I saw somebody tweet today and they said it was some kind of like scatter graph showing that the reason players want to transfer is to get more minutes. And it's like, well, no shit. Like, everyone wants to play. These are competitors. Like, that shouldn't surprise anybody that that's the number one reason that players are moving.
Yeah. I mean, I'm disappointed have Ken joining. He always talks about playing time is currency, like this game, right? So it's all about where can you get more of it? You know, that's probably driving, not surprisingly, driving a lot of the decisions is like, hey, where am I going to get more playing time? How do I get more?
Yeah.
Because everyone's eyes are on the NBA, or at least playing at the next level, right? So you're trying to set yourself up, and you can be selfless and all of that during the season, but at some point you got to look back and say, all right, my goal is to get to the NBA. Is this helping me get to the NBA? And that's
But you tell me about your time, because in my time, we all talked to each other, whatever. And I think every player talked about transferring at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know if we all talked about, like, you know what, like this, that, the other, the grass is greener. Right. You know, we love Rugby Road. We love Little John's. But you know what?
Right.
You know me, I could play more at Arkansas State than Virginia.
Right.
And so I think, I don't know if you guys are the same way, but we all talked about it, man.
Well, me, Justin, and Darion Atkins, we were pretty close. We always hung out. Darion was always at our house and whatnot, or our freshman year when Bub was there, when Jontel Evans was there. And we would talk about it like the guy you would never think that wanted to transfer, Justin, was the one that wanted to transfer freshman year. Justin was like, yo, because, you know, when we started freshman year, he wasn't playing a lot. And, you know, he was just like, bro, maybe I should have went to Maryland, you know. And then I wasn't feeling that way because I was playing a lot of minutes. I was starting. I started, 9 games? I went 8-1. I was playing a lot of minutes, and I was important. So I'm just like, nah, bro, just wait it out. You know, we used to always talk about it, man. And at the end of the day, nobody would ever pull the trigger on it.
Exactly. Like, right.
You feel me? You just talked about it. Like, I could talk about how I should have went to Cincinnati or Creighton. Like, because I didn't go on my – like, I went on one visit, and that was the UVA. I had Creighton, Cincinnati, and who did I have next? I think NC State next. I had all three of them lined up the next 3 weekends. I went to UVA. It was over. Like, my uncle lived in Richmond. He taught me how to play basketball. UVA is right here. We only had – Jontel at the point guard position at the time, so it was perfect for me, man. But yeah, we talked about that a lot.
So Arkansas State wasn't on you like they were on me back in the day. That's amazing.
No, my prep school, actually, like, going out of my senior year, I had no offers. I averaged 25-6-4 my senior year. I had no offers, and I didn't know why. And it was because of the high school I was at. They were taking my stuff and shredding it, not giving it to me. They were a football school. They wanted me to go to school for football. I didn't want to. I only played football for fun. I was just good at it, you know? And they wanted me to go to school for football. They wouldn't show. They were just like trying to like, yo, push me to football. Like, you're not getting any interest for basketball, which I knew wasn't true. But But I went to my prep school. We held training camp at my high school. And I, you know, I went to Fishburne Military Academy right there in what's the name of the city? I forgot the name of the city. It's 30 minutes from Charlottesville. I know you guys know. Y'all got
Syria?
Waynesboro.
Okay.
Waynesboro. Yeah. So
where'd you grow up? North Carolina or Virginia?
Yeah, I grew up in Kannapolis, North Carolina. It's hometown right there. Where I grew up. But yeah, they saw me at an unsigned senior showcase. And that's actually where UVA saw me. They saw me at a round robin tournament. I'll never forget that day at the round robin tournament. I had no offers at all. It was a kid there. I think he was going JUCO, but all the schools were there looking at him. And I ended up having 30 and 10 that game. And next thing you know, at my next game, every school was around the court at my next game. And I had like 28 and 6 at the next game. As I'm driving home, I'm not driving home, I'm riding with the coach. My mom calls me and was like, hey, University of Virginia just called me. It's like, Coach McKay, like, you know him? And I was like, no. She's like, well, yeah, they must have saw you play. Like, he's coming to fly in, boom, boom, boom. But it was like, they wanted me that year, but it was too late because I had signed to go to Fishburne at an unsigned senior showcase the weekend before. So that coach came down. We had our training camp at my high school. I got 8 D1 offers in training camp that week. When I couldn't get one offer my senior year the whole season. And that just blew my mind. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, it just took somebody that really believed in me and that could see that I could play and put me in front of coaches to get those offers and whatnot.
Before I was going to ask you about Mark stuff. Mark just joined, but Ted, tell the fans what are you up to now? Under pressure, you got the gear on. Background. Tell us about this so people can, and how they find it and all that.
Yeah, man. So right now, back home, I got my own brand. I created Under Pressure. It was my first year pro in Costa Rica. I was just thinking about how I've been through so much adversity, and like I was under a lot of pressure. And then light bulb just came to me. I created this brand, Under Pressure. Sorry about that. I created this brand Under Pressure, and sorry, that was my girlfriend calling me right now. You know, I got a kid on the way, so she's calling me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, thanks. But I made this brand like when I got back home from my rookie year in Costa Rica, and it turned into a skills training, you know, brand. So right now I'm back home. I have my own skill development business. I train from elementary school to pro guys, NBA guys. I got the gear on. I got my IG is Tev_UnderPressure. I have my training page is UP Skills Work with a Z, and my business page is UnderPressure_UP. I sell a lot of activewear, sweatsuits and things like that. But mostly what my brand is about how you respond to adversity under pressure. Are you going to fold or are you going to keep going and keep pushing until you push through and reach success? But my brand is about teaching the kids, you know, that you can make it out of any situation that you're in, no matter where you're from. I'm from little old Kannapolis, North Carolina. And now the whole world knows about me. So it's this brand is just more than just, you know, basketball training. It's life. And I just mentor a lot of kids. I train a lot of kids here. And I train the Gatorade Player of the Year, North Carolina, Jaden Bradley. Like that's how much this business is flourishing for me. And it's not because it's about the money with me. It's because it's genuine. It's from the heart. And I love guiding these kids and putting them in a position to be successful and telling them, you know, the ins and outs of what to do and what not to do. But that's what my brand is about, man. It's all from the heart. It's all genuine. And you guys support. I'm trying to go global with this. Definitely trying to go global.
Put all the links in the description below.
Yeah, make sure.
And then what about the kids in Charlottesville? Is it mostly in North Carolina? Are you going to come up there and do some camps? Or you gonna do
so I've been trying to figure out, you know, a way to come to Charlottesville and, you know, host a camp or something for the kids, because a lot of kids from Charlottesville actually hit me up and was like, "Do you just train North Carolina?" I actually had a kid come down from Charlottesville about a year and a half ago and train with me for a weekend. And like, his mom hits me up all the time, like, "I wish I could get him back." So I want to get up there and, you know, come back and give back and bring under pressure to Charlottesville. I've actually been thinking about moving back to Virginia, which is the crazy thing. Yeah.
Wait, so Mark, appreciate you jumping on. Earlier we were talking about everybody at some point has a thought to transfer. And I know you've talked about it a bunch of times about Ty, his first year, not getting minutes. What do you think the kids now on this program are thinking? You know, they're probably sitting down, they've had their exit interviews with TV, and they're probably calling their parents, and they're debating, like, what do you think is going through their mind, especially with COVID and people living far away and not seeing, like, how do you think those conversations are going?
Real quick. Hey, Tev, how are you? Good to see you again, bro. It's been a while.
Great. How you doing?
I'm good. Love the name Under Pressure.
Thank you.
Good.
It's binary, right? It's on the court, how you handle it. And it's off the court too, how you face adversity and how you deal with pressure and to people who deal with the best. And it may not be figuring it out immediately, but at some point with some guidance and with some coaching and with some training and with some mentorship,
right?
You know, that's the path to make, to be successful with it. So I love that name.
Thank you.
I mean, I always talk about when coaching, like, it's the people who can handle pressure and make decisions and make decisions in chaotic environments are the ones who win out. Right. And that's in life. And that's also on the court. So I love that name.
Thank you.
So T-Dubs, yeah, we talk about that often, and I am always, I guess, mindful of it. I try to be mindful of it when kids aren't getting a chance to play and how they're going to handle it and how, what they're going to do and how they're thinking throughout the time when they first arrive. The interesting thing about University of Virginia is you're always up for an audition every practice, right? Every game and every practice. So some schools, you don't get that chance, right? You get stuck in a hole, or you get stuck in a position of either being able to or starting or come off the bench or not playing. Sometimes you're never going to get a chance to show that you have value and that you are worthy and that you can help a team out. But that's not the case with UVA, where I've seen guys. So in the beginning of Ty's first year, I felt like, wait a minute, how come he's not getting a chance? He was really the only one not getting a chance. Right? Out of, I think, 10 or 11 available guys after what happened with Austin Nichols, I think he was pretty much the only one that wasn't a rotation. Jared Reuter was playing a little bit, and then it was Ty. And I remember, like, being at a game and walking up out of my seat and sitting next to my younger son, Kobe, and getting up and leaving and going to walk around the stadium, and just had to get on the phone it was hard for me to watch. And, you know, we all want to be positive and we want to all root for the team and be supportive. And it's a conundrum and it's complicated. We have emotions and we all want our children to be happy, and all the children want to be happy, and figuring out what happiness is important. And I know that. So we got on the phone and we talked to a few people, but there was conversation with Ty and Bennett, and Ty felt really comfortable being there, and he felt comfortable that was the right place, and he felt comfortable that with the coaching staff. But it's always, everybody wants to play immediately, has to play immediately. And that's the culture today, where it wasn't when I played, when Dougie played, that wasn't it. Like, you waited your turn. And you battled and you battled and you battled and you fought. And that's just now it is. That's not how it is. So I don't know if you guys probably mentioned, did you guys talk about Casey already?
No.
Okay. No. I mean, I get it's the news came out that he's transferring. Right. And this is after his second year. And sometimes, even though Casey has played, maybe it's not the best fit for him. And so I can respect his decision. I respect anybody's decision.
Right.
And Casey's decision is he was there for 2 years. Maybe it's not the right place for me where I'm going to get playing time, where I can see in the future, like, okay, I'm going to be the starting two guard, or this is the best offense for me, or this is the best defense for me, right? I want to be comfortable. I want to know that I'm getting at this point by my junior year. Now he could be a sophomore again next year, but maybe he's thinking four and out or three and out. Who knows what people think. And I want to be in a position where I can showcase my talent and where I can be on the court at least 75% of the game. Right. And that's what people think. And that's what people want to do. And people have to be comfortable. So again, I think Casey should, if he's not comfortable being in his role, then you know what? You got to consider it. You have to. And are you going to be considered a valuable member of the team? And if not, like, what's, people are starting to think about their futures coming their junior year. Right. Yeah, when I played and when Dougie played, I think we were thinking about the present. We were thinking about, how am I going to help my team? What role am I going to play this year? But by come now, it's like, wait a minute. I want to go to the league. I want to go play overseas. I want to make this a career. And just like every other profession, just like every other, I guess, and I don't, it's not really a course study, right? It's not your core courses. It's basketball is not allegedly not supposed to be your undergrad degree or what you're going for. But the truth is, at this level, at the ACC level, that's who those guys are. They're professional players. A lot of them, not everyone, but there, a lot of them are. And so you're starting to think about, how can I get to that next level while helping my team, right? And while winning and while creating, while having fun. And so if I'm on the bench, how am I doing that? Unless I don't care. And the other thing is, like, you want guys like that. You want guys to want to play. You want guys to want to be competitive and want to battle it out during practice and demand playing time. If you don't have those guys who don't think they're the good, they can't play in the ACC. They shouldn't be. They're not ACC players.
Well, and guys get to the next level from all kinds of different schools, but all the guys that get to the next level play minutes. Guys are not getting to the next level if they're only getting, you know, 5 to 7 minutes off the bench a game.
Right, but the amount of guys who get to the next level from mid-level schools aren't nearly as high as the amount of guys who get to the next level from the Power Five conferences.
Right, but you know, if you're on the bench,
I understand your point.
You're not getting seen. You're not getting noticed. Right. And I mean, I totally understand. And that's the feedback I'm getting today on Twitter, and you're seeing people responding to Casey's tweet about it. I mean, people understand. And I think, you know, particularly with Casey, you see it just, you know, we think he's a great player, and I think he's going to be really successful somewhere, but it hasn't worked out really that well for anybody, unfortunately. And so I don't think anyone blames him. I think we all expect him to actually be very successful wherever he goes, and he's going to hopefully choose wisely and find, you know, the system that he's looking for. But I mean, I don't see who can blame a player that just wants to play.
What about the COVID factor and being away from home and you're isolated and you're does that play any role into any of this? I don't know. That's a question.
Of course, it's horrible.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, Tevin said it. He loved UVA. He loved the school. I assume he had outlets. He'd go to parties or whatever. And these kids, so now you play a game. You had a bad game. You go back and you're in your room. There's no outlet, right?
Fortnite.
And we've talked about that. No, Fortnite's not an outlet.
Right. It's your social network that kind of makes you.
Yeah, you can't go out and see your homeboys and your friends and like, yo.
Yeah, but that is a social outlet. Man. That is a huge social outlet, Dougie. You and I don't understand that.
Right, but you can have that anywhere. You can play Fortnite with those
I was just going to say that.
No, stop. That's an anti-social outlet.
Dougie, I think it's Dougie, ask Tevin. Dougie, you're living in the 80s and the 90s.
Ask Tevin. Tevin, if he had a bad game, he'd go back and he'd go to you know, Rugby Road or the corner.
I'm going to Trinity or Boylan. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask Grant.
Fresh. It's a different outlet, but it's an outlet.
No, stop.
Different. Wait, Dougie, you can't say no. You haven't done it.
I know. It's not. I know the difference.
You're
not in the outlet.
Back
it's
just like, sitting there by yourself. You're gonna go talk to your closest friends and players.
Right, so you're sitting by yourself, talking to your friends, sitting by yourself playing Fortnite. I'm talking about human interaction. But you're
talking to people, though. No, my point is... No,
you're at a bar and you're high-fiving the football team. You don't develop
an affinity for UVA unless you're getting out into the UVA community. You're going up to Boylan and training stuff.
It's a different outlet, but it's an outlet.
Which is fine. I don't discount that as a social outlet, but you can do that anywhere.
I'm not going to lie. I would have went crazy if that was the only outlet I had during that time. I had to socialize.
It doesn't make up for not being able to do the social outlet at all.
Yeah.
But it helps a little bit. But it doesn't.
No, I mean, like the women's team's there, the students are there. It's hugs, it's like physical touch, the whole thing. It's the best, man.
PG-13 show, Doug.
No. What do you mean? Nothing. So, Tevin, thankfully, I was in Minneapolis for the Final Four, right?
Mm hmm.
And Ty Jerome brought it for us. We were all there. The kids came back to the hotel, the players. And right. We're in the hotel, and I'm with Harold Dean and all the legends, whatever. And these guys come in, and they go upstairs to their room. Or to the third floor, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
If in our time, we would have thrown our backpacks away and been on top of the bar and like, let's go. How about if you won the national championship and you come back to the team hotel?
Oh we're different. Out.
Right.
We're out. Yeah, we're out. Like,
but you go down like the party's going on. You're
breaking that blue tape.
Guys are buying you drinks if they're legal.
We're breaking that blue tape. I don't even think they're putting the blue tape up that night. Yeah.
The blue tape.
It's just a waste of tape at that point.
Yeah, it's a waste of tape. There is no reason of putting that up. We're out. We win that national championship. Like when we won the ACC, tournament, we came back and it was a crowd. Everybody was going crazy. Man, we went out that night. Like what? Yeah, national championship. That's a different story. We might not even be coming back the next day. Mike can't get us up. Can't find us. Who knows?
You're not playing Fortnite that night, is my point.
No.
Like trying to find somebody in Australia to be my homeboy.
Fresh, nobody's playing it that night after you win.
So you're comparing Final Four night to regular season, right?
And Fresh, you compare Final Four night to a COVID night where you can't do anything.
I know. I'm only saying you guys don't have that outlet, so it's not like
But everybody.
Yeah.
Sorry. Everybody has that. Everybody's faced with that. The original question, right? All over the country.
Yeah.
How much does COVID or play a role into transferring? And every school is faced with that. So I'm not sure that that's the case, right? And I think what's facing transfers is people not getting playing time, changes of coaches, right? There's a lot of coaching changes already so far, right?
Yep.
Those two things are probably the two major contributing factors.
And they made it easy. So Tevin made a point. I think you missed it, Mark.
Well, that's the major contributing factor, right?
And he had like 14 different swings in the middle of his transfer. Yeah. If he transferred today, it's seamless. He goes to George Mason. He goes to UNC. He goes wherever he wants to go, and boom, you're done.
Yep.
And he got zigged and zagged the whole other way. So.
Right, and especially this year, process right?
Is crazy back
then. I'm transferring tonight. I have my Kentucky.
Oh no!
Well, they need some help. They need some help. Definitely, so. They probably welcome with open arms.
See a Duke or UNC player transfer to the other school and play the next year. It's going to happen.
It could happen this year, right? This year would be the year for it to happen because no one's penalized for transferring interconference.
Yeah, I would. Oh, I'd love to see
who's
that.
How about
Brakefield?
Brakefield.
Oh, Kessler.
Brakefield and Kessler, right? But
yeah.
I heard Kessler, I heard the front runner for Kessler was Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And for Brakefield, I spoke to my guys who are managers who are for the Duke team. And one of them said he's not surprised because they have so many five stars coming in next year. And the one big game he had, maybe he had a couple of other decent games, was the one against us. I don't think he had another big game like that. So we're all looking at him like, oh man, this kid's so good.
When you commit yourself to recruiting those one and dones, you have to have the turnover in the program. And whether guy's draft right at the end of his first year, he's got to go because you've got to be able to promise the guy that you're trying to recruit, that this other five-star who's played for you a year isn't going to start over him. It's back to the minutes thing. It's all about minutes.
What happens when you go to Kentucky?
Yeah.
Make sure that Calipari's promising you playing time.
The other question for me is, you know, we're very short-sighted now. So going forward, you know, next year, does every kid think I can just do my thing 1 year and transfer? What does it change or not?
I think
once you make a rule, it's very hard to go back.
Right. It's very hard to go back.
Okay. Very hard to go back. So does every kid go to school and like, no big deal. I'll transfer and I'm free the next year. So it's really hard to do, man.
It's going to be wild because I think that stays in place. The only COVID thing is the extra year that everyone gets, but I think the transfer,
the free transfer, right?
Yeah, it's just everyone gets one free transfer, which is going to be crazy. I love it.
Does this mean we're now essentially going to be in this one and done situation, except with transfers? Like once we accept these transfers and they come in, they're gone. We're just going to always have to cycle through transfer, like.
Well, but there's a lot of guys that are coming in after playing 1 year. So, I mean, there's a lot of transfers on the market that are going to have
4 years. So we're just in a constant state of transfers. So.
Yeah. I mean,
very hard. I don't think so. I don't think so because I think this is just this is going to be the 1 year. I don't know if there's.
I'm not so sure.
It's a free year. According to NCAA, this is going to be the 1 year. They're only doing this year. Now maybe the rule change. The
free transfer, you're saying?
Yeah, the free transfer rule is supposed to be this year. That rule will be adopted.
It's only this year. The free transfer with no sitting out is only this year, or is it one time for everyone moving forward?
I thought it was one.
From what I understand, this year
it's very hard to pull back. I guess
it's going
to
be.
That's going to be hard to pull back. Yeah, it's going to be hard.
Yeah,
it's going to be very hard to pull it back, man.
Huh. Okay. That'll be crazy. All right.
Let's see how this goes. All right. Well. We're probably way over time. Tev, we really, really.
Yeah, that was fun, man.
Yeah, it was good talking. I appreciate y'all. We appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all inviting. We'll have you back on soon, and we'll put all the link in the description for Under Pressure below. Make sure you support.
Yes, sir. I appreciate y'all.
Good luck, Tev. I think we'll probably do another episode to redo the Sweet 16 maybe at some point. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll figure that out.
Okay. Just let me know. I'm always available for you guys, man.
I can't believe you got pushed down in that play, yo.
Don't remind me, man.
Well, let's just end it with Tev was absolutely
foul.
Tev was fouled.
100%.
I get reminded at least once a week.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I've got my stories too.
T Dubs, there's a T-shirt.
That is. Tev was fouled.
There's a t-shirt. Tev was fouled.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do a collab. Tev was fouled under pressure.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
I like it.
Doing his job.
Yeah, Fresh, GK, Phony, Mark, and a special guest, Jeff Jones. We are out.
Out.